Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. Here we are in the posh studios of WAMC on Central Avenue in Albany, New York. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady.
It is great to be in this posh environment.
Isn't it swell here? Gosh.
Was that a shot that you guys were taking about posh?
Dr. Alan Shartok, he, the proprietor of Posh Studios here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Yes, yes.
Well, what was a shot, right? You were taking a shot. You were starting the program by taking a shot.
I'm just trying to get people to envision things. You know, we want to engage people's senses here in the world of journalism and getting a sense of where we are here on Central Avenue. You know, this is a remarkable place.
I can't wait until we have this new device we're thinking of in which you can smell. The radio will produce smells.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's kind of stinky, yeah. What?
But today, relatively not smelly in here.
No, it's
not
fabulous.
Yet.
Not yet, right, absolutely. You know, there hasn't, we ought to just make note of the fact that Judy is here, notwithstanding this seeming arson in your building that I think a lot of people know about, and probably just it'd be good for you to mention. This did not actually disrupt your operation,
right? But it was smoky in my building for quite a few days. So at the Daily Gazette, there was three separate fires started in our press room and our mail room this past weekend or so ago. The case has still not been resolved, but we were able to print despite the fact that the fires did melted essentially our electrical panel, so we needed to replace that very quickly. One of the things that has been a consequence of this is we've gotten wonderful feedback from our readers, from our vendors, from neighboring newspapers like the Times Union, which stepped up and said, we will gladly help you print your paper if you're unable to do so. It reminds you how much this newspaper or every newspaper means to the readers, because wonderful subscribers called up and said, you know, I hope you guys are all right. We really appreciate you being here. We want you to stay in business. So even though we're digital and we're 24/7, that print product still means a lot to people.
Or was it Clark Gable or Humphrey Bogart who yelled, roll 'em, or whatever at the end of the film?
Clark Kent? No.
Clark Gable.
Oh,
it was a wonderful film. I don't know what it's called, but you can't stop the press by setting five measly fires.
No.
Right.
No. And Judy's right. We all have emergency plans in place with backups, places where we would print if our facilities go down. And we've had to call upon that from time to time.
And now that everything is digital, you can just sort of move it over with a flick of a button.
It's a lot easier than it would have been before. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a serious thing. You know, we all are doing this digital world, but there's an interesting story here, an interesting study that's just out from Dartmouth and Carnegie Mellon, saying that reading something on a screen as opposed to something printed causes people to home in on details, but not broader ideas. So that, in other words, digital screens sort of create a kind of tunnel vision. So that people actually consume news differently, interact with it differently, if they're not in a newspaper, but rather they're on a screen.
So they remembered facts, but they didn't remember the context. They didn't remember, broad things. It's really, really interesting. We get the idea that people love the idea of tactiling, holding that newspaper and consuming that information that way. But this has really strong ramifications for us that we need to somehow get that information about those important context issues.
But on the other hand, think about this. The idea that some people get different things out of a newspaper versus digital, you get the idea. We do know, don't we, that older people who are used to newsprint are more likely to be the consumers of the old way than the new way. So when you compare and contrast, as we academics say, what they get out of it, it may well have to do with the function of age.
Well, no, they're not talking about just, this is not just anecdotal, it is a controlled experiment, and what they found is...
I see what you mean. So they sat people down. And
yeah. Yeah, and they found that actually, this may actually change the way people think. If we're increasingly consuming information digitally, it may mean that there will be an evolution of thought that's less inclined to look at the bigger picture and more to home in on just little things.
As for me, I don't believe a word of it.
I see.
Well, you know, you probably have the same issue in radio. People listen...
If they listen out of a transistor, it's different than if they listen out of a big old monitor.
Transistor.
Remember those? Remember when transistors came out?
People walk around with little transistor radios in their ears.
I do remember because I heard the Clay Liston fight in the back of a constitutional law class. While the guy was droning on, I had that thing right up to my ear.
I remember mowing the lawn listening to the Indianapolis 500, which used to be such a big deal, you know.
Yeah, it's still hard for me to understand how people can listen to baseball games on the radio, but I know it's a very popular thing to do. I've just never been able to get into it.
Well, in the old days, as you remember, that when the Giants, in an act of perfidy, along with the Dodgers, moved to the West Coast, they put the games on to keep everybody happy, and there was a guy who would get it by teletype. And he had a stick, and he would hit
make it sound like it was real.
There was a hit going on. Yeah.
Click. Very clever.
You know, but that's really good research. I just hope there's something we can do about it, because I think understanding context and the broader things are really important.
Well, yes. Although in this current presidential climate, people are kind of getting broad drifts, but they're overlooking the details of policy, where frequently there are lies being perpetrated by candidates.
And yet, you know, everything I'm reading is, why can't the press call Trump for what he is? He's a big fat liar and he lies and you guys aren't doing your job. But every time I turn around, we're doing something. We're saying that was a lie or this was a lie. So I don't understand. You let him get away with it. Why is the press the butt board? I mean, I don't get that.
You know, it speaks to how we do it. So one of the things they study is whether or not graphics work better in explaining where the lie is and how it works. I think Fox News did this very well in some interview they did with Trump, where they called him out on a number of different... It was during the debate, and it worked. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very effective. It's, again, it speaks to how people are understanding things or consuming knowledge.
But people don't care, you know, even when it is... Yeah, I think to Alan's point, it's not that the media ought to be blamed for this. People overlook the fact that these lies are pointed out by the media.
I don't know. I think they project themselves into the liar's position. In other words, my sense of it is that I want to lie every once in a while. And if this guy lies, that's okay. Where were you, Jack? Well, I was.
Especially because they dislike the media more than they dislike their candidate. And so if the media is calling him on the lies, the media must be bad, right?
And once again, we get Rex into the same old definitional problem we've had so many times about the media. So, Judy, I know that you're a very fine example of a woman editor of a major newspaper. But, you know, if you read the New York Post or the Daily News, the competition is for who can have a different picture of a woman in scanties in the paper. Now, that's as anti-feminist as you really want to get, because it leads to the objectification of women. But that's media. The New York Times is media. You don't see it in the Times. You see it, but they're selling how many editions of the Post and the News every week? A lot of millions and millions of people.
Yeah, but those publications have been around forever and have been doing kind of the same thing forever. What's different nowadays?
Well, what's different is how they can do it. In other words, in the old days, they might have a black and white photo or a smaller photo. Now they're full-page photos. They're unbelievable. And I only know about it because I have to read those papers as part of my job every day.
Yes, sir.
And they're right. and they're clearer, even though some traditions have changed. So they're putting these starlets out there, a picture of them, and these are celebrities who are looking for that kind of attention.
Exactly.
Exactly, right?
As are the magazines that, you know, yeah. GQ, is that one of them? Or Playboy this very morning, or one of the others. But there's no competition. It's that there seems to be a work, as you imply, a working relationship here.
Right.
You give us the nudie pictures, and we will put them in the paper and give you credit.
Nearly nude. These are actually not.
That's
but
right.
You know what has changed is this. I had a friend, a colleague, when I was a reporter downstate, who when she came to New York for her first job as a newspaper reporter, she got hired right out of the University of Missouri Journalism School to go to work for the New York Daily News. So she was a young woman reporter in the summertime in New York City, and she was sent to Coney Island to the beach to see how many men would try to pick her up on the beach. And when they would come by and offer a sort of pickup line, she would say, you know, I'm a reporter and I'm just doing this. Would you mind just waiting here for a little bit and you'll get your picture in the paper? And so within an hour, they had accumulated enough men who tried to pick her up that they did a photograph of a human pyramid, you know, with
That's
her
fantastic.
Climbing up at the top.
That's fantastic.
And did this photo, and she wrote a story about men trying to pick
and
her up on the beach.
And what paper was that?
It was the Daily News.
The Daily News.
Mm-hmm. So she was sort of a human decoy. I don't think we would do a story. Well, we wouldn't. I don't think the Daily News would do that story, but I don't know. Maybe
well,
they would.
The Daily News in New York has decided that sexual predators in New York City who pick on kids have gone amok and that we need more legislation.
So right.
They put these pictures of the governor, you know, the majority leader of the state Senate,
mm-hmm.
and they
the
pose
assembly
them,
speaker.
And mm-hmm. assembly speaker, and they pose them as the three monkeys, one with his hand over his eyes and one over his, and they give their phone numbers on the front page of the paper every
right.
single day.
This is part of a strategy by the Daily News to make the front page viral, because they discovered that people are sharing the Daily News front page when they do clever front pages, and it's wonderful for their social media strategy. They're getting a lot more. They're building their digital presence. So it's a clever thing to do. If that's your intent, if you're just trying to get
numbers.
What
do you think of it? As you know, you look,
well,
look, let's face it.
There are two
things. Graduated first in your class at Columbia Journalism School. So I want to ask you a question.
I'm never reminded. I regret telling him that. Thank you very much.
So what do you think of this strategy?
Well, there are two problems with it, I think. One is putting your editorials on the front page. I think that people in America are not accustomed to that kind of bias, to having your front page, which usually is a news presentation, instead be an effort to influence public opinion. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, call these people on behalf of the position that we, the Daily News, is taking. The second is that it's purely aimed at numbers. It's just trying to get attention. It's not based upon what is the most important news, the most significant local news or national world news. It's just something trying to get people's attention.
So that's sort of Trumpian, you know, if you think about it. He doesn't care what it is as long as it brings attention and as long as people, you know, agree with him.
You know, I think, by the way, that a generation from now, there will be some words connected to Donald Trump that will, I mean, I think the word Trump, there may be Trumpists. Or there may be Trumpian may be one of those words, depending on how far he goes this year.
Well, mm-hmm. and the same thing with Bernie Sanders. You know, they're...
Well, I don't think he's going to be an adjective.
Well, Bernieites.
It's not going to last, I'm sorry.
Well, no, it could. As we refer to the left as time goes on, we could say, that guy's a real Bernieite.
Mm. Mm. Well, do people still say McGovernite?
No.
Well,
I think Bernie has a lot more pizzazz than McGovern ever had. I'll be honest with you.
Well, I'm glad to hear your honesty. It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok, he's being honest with us. That's isn't that what politicians say when they're about to lie? Judy
honest.
Sanders
right,
from the Daily Gazette. I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union. Sir, yes, you're about to say what?
You're right.
I'm right.
That's exactly it. As
I'll
a reporter, you get used to listening for that.
Yeah, frankly.
Yeah. I'm telling you the truth here.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Okay, so Judy, I have a question for you. In your coverage area, which is wide, but in Schenectady itself, the octogenarian Hugh Farley, who, by way of disclosure, used to sit on this board of WMC, has finally announced, finally is an adjective that I suppose would not be appropriate. But
adverb, actually.
You're so right, and that's why you went to Columbia. Okay. I like that, Rex.
Go ahead.
I really do. So he's finally announced, after being in the state Senate, I swear there used to be dinosaurs outside when he first got in there. Now he's been there for a long time, and his presumptive successor will be one James Tedisco, who we have interviewed on this station any number of times, and he will obviously get an opponent, right?
There are a number of people who've already spoken out, and Senator Farley has come out and said
Tedisco.
Jim Tedisco is the person he supports to replace him.
Right, even though there are those people who have said over the years, you know, that there was some anxiety between the two of them because everybody knew.
I can't wait to see where this is going on a media issue.
Well, I was going
to
ask Judy, how they have to play that because, you know, Tedisco obviously is well known. He's got an incredible mouth. He always says things that are provocative. And like Trump, he's good news. He's big news. So how do you play that? Do you make sure that everybody gets 50-50, or what do you do?
From a media perspective, I'm looking forward to a good campaign. When you have a well-established incumbent for so many years, often you don't get a campaign. You get, you know, someone, even though Madeleine Thorne challenged Senator Farley for many, many terms, often the incumbents, this happens all over the state, you don't get a great deal of debate, you don't get a great deal of coverage. So when you cover a candidacy, does every one of the Jim Todisco is announcing this week, do you cover that on the front page? Do you put it on A1? Do you keep track of where you place these in the physical paper? It's always something you watch because you can bet that the candidates are watching.
You could predict they'll come in and talk to you about it.
They start measuring the number of inches you give to one candidate and another, where the stories are placed, what you do with it. So, and increasingly, they are watching what you do with it on social media.
So when there's an open seat, you get a more of a contest. Therefore, you get more play in the paper.
Yes, more spirited coverage. If it's somebody cruising without opposition, there's not much for us to cover.
Does the editorial page already know who they're going to support?
Oh, for heaven's sake.
No, but it's such a good question because you people are.
Yeah, that's all. I don't even know why they bothered to do anything. No, of course not. We're going to watch how the race plays out. We'll discuss things.
And then you'll endorse the guy you're going to endorse
it's
anyway.
Not a bad question in this sense. Yes. That I think it's safe to say, given where, for example, the Times Union editorial page, where the editorial page is, that the Times Union editorial page is not going to endorse Donald Trump. There have been many editorials already denouncing his stance on the issues, and so I think it's pretty safe to say that the editorial endorsement for president will go to whomever the Democratic nominee is. But that aside, it doesn't matter. Voters don't pay much attention to the editorial page anyway. You know, they don't, and certainly our coverage isn't influenced by the editorial page.
Isn't that interesting, Rex? Because it's somewhat self-serving and deceptive. May I just say that to you? And the reason I
What's that? Which part?
The whole thing. Ah. And the reason and the reason I say that is you give somebody a choice, a candidate a choice, as to whether they're endorsed by the Times Union or not, or the Independent Gazette, you can be sure that they are going to fight like crazy to get that endorsement, and they're going to send out something that says, endorsed by the Times Union.
Yeah, I think that's the only value to the candidate, is that they get to put them on those little cards that they flood your mailbox with.
Well, sure.
We don't know to what extent it makes a difference, actually.
I do.
They want it, but we don't know what difference it makes. In the presidential primary, the Times Union offered endorsements to John Kasich and Hillary Clinton, and both lost in the congressional districts that are the three congressional districts that we cover.
Well, but here's what's so interesting about that. You guys have a fair modicum of chutzpah to do that.
Chutzpah.
Unbelievable gall, to do that.
How's that?
Why is that?
Well, because in the end, I'm telling you now who the Times Union editorial board is going to support in this presidential election.
I just did.
No. Assuming it's Hillary and Trump, the Trumpster. Yeah. You're going to endorse Hillary.
Yeah, I just said that.
So it takes an awful lot of chutzpah to endorse the Republican who you are not going to endorse in the general election.
Well, no. In fact, we had the same endorsements because
in the primary,
offering opinions about, or our assessment on who the best Republican candidate is and who the best Democratic candidate is.
Which we don't very often do. We generally don't endorse in primaries. But in this case, we thought that since it made a difference in New York, we thought we would give voters some of the benefit of our insight, which they clearly didn't care about. Republican voters really wanted Donald Trump. They didn't want Mr. Kasich.
I don't agree with you about this. I mean, I really think if you are going to be committed to the Democratic candidate, which you are, then you shouldn't be mucking around in making Republican endorsements. Okay, but that's my limited opinion because, Yeah, you say, huh, but it's
But would you
snotty,
have them so be quiet, entirely silent on the issue of the Republican primary, not write anything?
Well, no, I suppose not. Judy,
well, there we go. Okay, so Dr. Chartok will be shown to have reversed himself. Thank you very much.
No,
okay,
no, because in a case of somebody like the Trumpster, you do this. But however, there is this massive public opinion that is in play in this election. Mm-hmm. And we have a revolution going on in both parties. We have the Bernie revolution going on, and we have the Trump revolution going on. And the major institutions, the political parties, the newspapers, which are fairly predictable, nobody gives a damn. They all give them a Bronx cheer, put their hand in front of their nose and say, we don't give a damn what you're saying. We're voting for Trump. Nobody understands it completely, except there's a demographic who Trump appeals to.
Right. Actually, what I liked the Bill Maher line, who said that conservatives were very upset when Trump decided to go presidential and to actually read a speech on a teleprompter. And he said the Trump supporters don't like it because he's reading. Sorry.
That's funny. And it also goes to show.
What the elite thinks of the...
It also goes to show. Mm-hmm. That's a very funny joke.
There you go. Thank you very much. So we need to talk about...
Not!
John Stewart has taken a shot at it. He says he's upset by corrupt and blinded media and TV executives whose coverage has been shown to be for conflict over clarity. He said the media is... Please be plural here. The media is, as usual, focused on the wrong things and abdicating responsibility for the general filtration of toxicity.
So he should talk. Here he has the most popular program on the air for all of us who love this stuff. And he quits and he goes away, leaving a giant void where he once sat. So now he's going to take shots at everybody else. And I wanted to add one thing. You should have read one word in there, Rex.
What's that?
About these executives. They can either be executives, take the bait, put Trump on, and do the conflict, or they can be ex-executives.
Yeah, and I love John Stewart, but this is nothing new. I mean, they have, cable news stations have been emphasizing conflict over issues for years. This is what they make their money on.
Right, and I really wish he would be a little bit more specific rather than blaming the media when he's saying that the press is covering the campaign but not covering veracity. There has been a great deal
Absolutely.
Of effort to cover veracity.
Every time Trump
says
something.
It's a cheap shot. It's easy. I mean, John Stewart, people love John Stewart, but I tell you, it's really easy to take pot shots from the sidelines like this. And I mean, I'd like to see him do, I'd like to see him back doing daily coverage. I mean,
which he did brilliantly.
And he did it with humor.
And he would put them on and he would say, show the candidate saying one thing, and then he would show the candidate saying another thing, the opposite thing. That's how you do it.
And most of his stuff taken from cable news stations.
Right. But I do think that he didn't have the responsibility of trying to do fair and accurate journalism. He was an opinion journalist. His goal was to present a point of view. So it was a little bit easier for him than it is for the people who work for America's great daily newspaper.
And I feel very sorry for both Judy and you having to sit there at night and do all of that. However, I also think that with his opinion pieces, he turned out to be more right than just giving the pablum that we get in the day-to-day press.
I think, I think that's an easy criticism that is unfair. I don't think that the stuff that is aired here that is presented by NPR News is very insightful. It's not pablum. And I don't think that NPR is necessarily that much better than the material that Judy carries from the New York Times or that we carry from any of our other sources. So I think that calling it pablum is a cheap, easy shot, and it plays to the public's distaste for the media in general.
Sounds a little Trump-esque.
It sounds Trump-esque. There you go. Another one of those Trump-related adjectives.
It doesn't sound
Bernie-esque, which Alan thinks is going to be a word. Bernie-esque. Yeah, that's going to survive. Yeah. And so anyway, I just wanted to make note of one little interesting research finding before we go here, and that is the mobile news era when everybody is getting their news now on handheld, and we are increasingly shifting to present news on handheld devices, which is a significant change in the way people are consuming news.
It's true. I don't use my big old computer lugger on my desk anymore.
Yeah.
I just use this thing.
And you know what they're finding is that conventional wisdom has been that readers are looking for these little short bits that the web, you need to be short. They're finding that actually readers spend more than twice the amount of time reading and scrolling through longer articles.
Long form, we call it.
Rather than shorter. The people will spend time with
longer
articles.
I do every
night.
In the middle of the night, I get up and read long stuff.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. There's only one thing that's going to change that.
What's that? Brain cancer.
If the predictions are that using, the cell phone causes,
is
not
that
funny.
What is your source on
it? It causes. Yeah, I think there was a great deal of speculation
about that earlier.
Oh yeah, there's a great deal of speculation. There we go, speculation. I think that the bigger problem is going to be your loss of sleep, interrupting your sleep.
I don't know how to do
not
it.
Not healthy.
You're right.
Melatonin.
And I feel sorry for myself. I tried the melatonin. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Tune into Medical Monday again. Oh, wait, sorry. It's not. It's the Media Project. Absolutely. Judy Patrick, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for being our leader, Rex, and for showing up.
Well,
Woo! Never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.